to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, June 22, 2020. The African Union slaps sanction on South Sudan.
South Sudan was due to pay commitments of which in December to January we paid 40% of our contribution and membership to the African Union.
And health officials intensify testings for COVID-19 in South Sudan.
Very soon also we are working with the World Health Organization to pre-position another lab in Wau. That will ease and reduce the load that is happening to the public health laboratory.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The African Union has banned South Sudan from participating in meetings and summits due to the country's failure to pay accumulated membership and annual subscription fee totaling to more than $9 million. South Sudan's deputy foreign minister says the African Union should have waited a bit longer because his country was already making arrangements to pay part of the money. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
South Sudan diplomats were caught by surprise when they were prevented from attending an AU meeting in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, last Tuesday. In a June 17th letter signed by Ambassador James Pitia Morgan, South Sudan's permanent representative to the African Union and the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, South Sudan was sanctioned after failing to pay annual subscription and membership fees to the AU for the past 3 years. The letter, which was seen by South Sudan in Focus, states, "We were barred from participating in the AU meeting of yesterday, June 16, 2020. It was a dramatic and an embarrassing scene when the chairperson of the meeting stopped the proceedings to inform South Sudanese diplomats that their participation was illegal." The letter went on to say, South Sudan is, quote, "A proud nation and proud people, we should not allow our country to be embarrassed at this regional, continental, and international stage," end quote. According to Morgan's letter, South Sudan owes the AU $9,191,234. Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Deng Dao Deng blames the government's delay on payment on the COVID-19 pandemic.
South Sudan was due to pay commitments of which in December to January we paid 40% of our contribution and membership to the African Union. We are committed as a country to pay our contribution, but it just delayed because of the situation that we are in.
Deng says the AU is an important body and South Sudan is ready to pay what it owes as soon as the coronavirus situation normalizes in the country. Nial Tit Mamer, a policy analyst with the Sud Institute in Juba, says South Sudan should avoid using the war and the pandemic as an excuse to avoid paying its annual fees to the regional body. He says South Sudan's absence from AU meetings will have negative impacts on the country when it comes to making strategic regional decisions.
As it is said, if you are not on the table, you are on the menu. So if South Sudan is not going to participate in those meetings where important decisions are going to be made, then of course it's a huge problem. And also it has also implication on our own pride as a nation. You know, it's embarrassing. So that in itself is a big impact too.
Mamer says being in a league of nations like the AU, the East African Community and the UN means South Sudan should not be defaulting because in those organizations, all countries are equal irrespective of the country's hardships.
Even if we are in a situation of war, we must try, and others will also know that we are trying and our situation is different. But if we just default completely, we don't pay anything, then this is something else.
At the same time, Mamer says the AU could have been a little bit lenient on South Sudan, given it just emerged from a civil war. Deputy Minister Deng says South Sudan paid 15% of the amount owed, about $3.5 million, last December. He says the AU should have informed South Sudan earlier rather than waiting until its delegates were already seated at the Addis meeting, then forcing them to leave. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
The international medical charity Doctors Without Borders and the World Health Organization say 3 to 5 people die weekly from acute respiratory infections at the camps for internally displaced persons across the country. Former Director General at the Ministry of Health in Unity State says 3 people died at the Protection of Civilians site last week from acute respiratory infections. For VOA News, Lasuba Memo reports from Juba.
John Nicholas Vendessa, MSF's head of mission on the COVID-19 emergency, says the medical charity has been collecting weekly data and analyzing the health situation in the country since the beginning of the year. For the last 2 months, Vendessa says the number of people dying from acute respiratory infections at the Bentiu POC site has been higher than previous months.
The number has been between 3 and 5 every week. So when we look at it overall, regarding the previous month, there is an increase, but on an overall overview, is not yet that alarming. Obviously, with the crisis that is happening now, with the pandemic of COVID-19, everybody have that in mind, but we are now looking more into what's happening in the community with the World Health Organization and other health partners in the camp to try to really find what is the cause of that trend.
Dr. Duol Biem Kwe Gwong, former Director General at the Health Ministry in the now defunct Northern Lich State, says 3 people died at the UN-run camp last week from acute respiratory infections. Dr. Kwe Gwong says tests conducted on all 3 show one of those who died tested positive for the coronavirus.
This could be due to coronavirus because one of the people who died, okay, was a suspected case of coronavirus. He was taken and sent to Juba before he died. But unfortunately, because, you know, results normally delay in Juba, we did not receive the results of the sample on time. The results came after he passed on.
Dr. Kwe Gwong says acute respiratory infections are not just happening at the POC site. He says similar cases have been reported at government health facilities, but could not say how many. Vendessa says the situation prompted MSF to contact the WHO.
We had in mind a bit of a worry. We went to see the World Health Organization and the Ministry of Health just to inform them that we are seeing that in our hospital. And this is what triggered the broader investigation alongside with them to actually go a bit deeper in every death and to investigate if actually the acute respiratory infection was the cause of the death.
The UN-run POC in Bentiu hosts about 12,000 internally displaced persons who fled their homes due to fighting in 2013 and renewed fighting in 2016. WHO says it is investigating the trend at the POC in order to establish whether the deaths are due to COVID-19 or something else. Dr. Joseph Wamala, WHO's Country Preparedness and International Health Regulation Office in South Sudan, told reporters in Juba the risk of infection is higher at IDP camps because of the favorable conditions there for other problems like malnutrition and malaria.
Because we have a high burden of conditions like malnutrition in these types of populations, so there is also worry that mortality may be higher in these settings.
Tho Loi, the National Health Ministry spokesperson, says officials are working to ensure that services aimed at preventing the spread of the virus extend beyond Juba, especially in high-risk areas such as Bentiu Town.
It's not only Bentiu. As the Minister of Health and together with our partners, we need to do a lot to ensure that whatever is happening regarding COVID-19 extend beyond Juba. And so we are working together, and there are actually sites that have been identified for case management in Juba and beyond Juba, looking at the high-risk areas and the state where we have already cases reported of COVID-19 outside Juba. I totally agree with you that we need to do a lot to ensure that the testing capacity and the treatment, I say, actually goes beyond Juba for handling cases of COVID-19.
As of Sunday, South Sudan registered 1,892 confirmed COVID-19 infections, with 89 recoveries and 34 deaths. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Still on health matters, South Sudan's health ministry says it is intensifying coronavirus tests. The deputy incident manager for COVID-19 at the Ministry of Health says laboratory technicians can now test up to 250 samples per day. Dr. Toot says the health ministry set another laboratory at Nimule Crossing Point to screen travelers entering the country. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Dr. Matthew Toot, the Deputy Incident Manager for COVID-19 at the Health Ministry, says South Sudan now has 7 machines for testing COVID-19 as compared to just a few short weeks ago when there was 1. Dr. Toot says the ministry has set up another laboratory at the Nimule border crossing point in a bit to decentralize coronavirus testing in the country. He says while 5 of the polymerase chain reaction or PCR machines we are stationed at Juba's National Laboratory to have been pre-positioned in Nimule at the South Sudan-Uganda border, where many coronavirus positive cases have been identified, including truck drivers coming from Uganda, Kenya and Tanzania.
Very soon also we are working with the World Health Organization to pre-position another lab in Wau. That will ease and reduce the load that is happening to the public health laboratory.
Dr. Toot says increasing COVID-19 testing is part of the health ministry's plan to decentralize operations aimed at controlling the spread of the virus in the country. Toot says the health ministry will also set up testing facilities in other state capitals. He says the ministry is also focused on contact tracing.
I believe there is still a knowledge gap among our people. Okay, people sometimes are uncooperative. They don't want to disclose the people whom they came into contact with. And sometimes they said, if I mention so and so, they will feel angry.
So far, South Sudan has registered 1,892 positive cases of COVID-19, including 34 deaths and 169 recoveries. Since the virus was confirmed in early April, 10,038 samples have been tested. Toot says the ministry has set up a surveillance team to specifically monitor COVID-19 related death cases and step up efforts to contain the virus. Of the 34 deaths, he says, roughly 70% died in their communities. Only a handful died at the infectious disease unit in Juba.
We are urging the communities, if you suspect, for example, a death might be related to COVID, you call the Minister of Health toll-free number, which is 6666, and then the team of mortality surveillance will be activated to try to investigate.
According to Dr. Joseph Wamala, WHO's Country Preparedness and International Health Regulation Officer in South Sudan, the country needs to step up more operations in attempts to contain the virus.
Within the East African region, and we looked at transmission in Kenya, South Sudan, Uganda, Burundi, and Rwanda, and Tanzania. So when we looked at that, looking at the intensity of transmission, South Sudan comes second after Kenya.
Wamala says so far there is still no cure for COVID-19.
The only way of containing this outbreak is through finding everyone who is sick, having them tested, ensuring that those who are positive are isolated and access care. Then we should also be able to list all the contacts, quarantine them.
While Wamala says WHO has identified some new guidelines to boost efforts to contain the virus. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Sudanese officials tackle gender-based violence. Find out how after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your most valuable possession?
My valuable possession right now will be my laptop, because I have a lot of confidential documents on it that are very dear to me and I can't afford to lose right now.
I think my smartphone that my dad bought for me. Yeah, I treasure it so much because it was so expensive and I was so happy.
Being in school means so much to me. Yes, I know I've not yet finished, but I'm struggling to reach there because I know it is important to me and it will be something good to me.
My most valuable possession is a photo I took with an important personality in the entertainment industry, and it's an important possession to me because anytime I look at it, it encourages me and inspires me to attain higher heights.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and the Africa Center for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The Sudanese transitional government is reiterating its commitment to combat all forms of violence against women. Sudan's Minister for Labor and Social Development says her ministry is working with other institutions to improve the conditions of women in the country. She says her ministry is working to enact laws to protect women against all forms of violence. For VOA News, Michael Atid reports from Khartoum.
Government and United Nations officials in Sudan say they are working to reform laws and regulations so that women across the country will be protected against violence. At a news conference in Khartoum on Saturday, which was the International Day for Elimination of Sexual Violence in Conflict, Labour and Social Development Minister Lina Sheikh said in Arabic that women in conflict-affected areas, including Darfur, Southern Kordofan and Blue Nile, will be given a special priority by the government.
I am proud to announce and reconfirm our commitment in the Ministry of Labour and Social Development and the commitment of our transitional government to enhance women opportunities and guarantee their rights and protect them from all forms of violence, including sexual violence.
In late April, the ministry launched a hotline service 093-000-8061 or 093-000-8059 for communities to call in and report any incident of domestic violence, including sexual violence on women and girls during the COVID-19 lockdown. Officials at the Labour and Social Development Ministry say for the last 2 months, they have documented more than 40 cases of sexual violence, including rape in Khartoum and other towns across Sudan. Minister Asher says the transitional government will ensure that all law enforcement agencies are aware of their role in protecting women, especially during the conflict. She says the proposed law criminalizes gender-based violence and other forms of violence against women.
We are working these days to draft a bill to criminalize gender-based violence. We are also preparing educational materials on issues related to human rights and educating women on how to protect themselves from gender-based violence, to be incorporated into the syllabus of the National Military Academy, Police Academy, Medicines and Health Colleges, and Colleges of Law.
As Sheikh says, her ministry will continue to provide psychological, social, health and legal support to women in accordance with international standard and to continue efforts aimed at promoting women's rights in Sudan by implementing the UN Security Council Resolution 1325 on women, peace and security. Speaking at the same weekend event, the United Nations Population Fund country representative for Sudan, Massimo Francisco Diana, said his agency will continue to stand with the Sudanese people to eliminate all forms of violence against women. Diana says his office has documented dozens of cases of sexual violence during the COVID-19 pandemic, but says many more cases are likely not being reported.
It's harder for people to report sexual violence. There are less health services. People cannot move. But you can join this fight. If you or a friend needs help, call the free gender-based violence hotline that can provide support and counseling.
Diana says certain Sudanese norms and culture prevent many women from speaking up about sexual violence.
There's a stigma against reporting sexual violence. Justice for these crimes are hard. We call on all armed groups to stop the suffering. We need to put survivors at the center of our response.
In early May, the Sudanese transitional government passed into a law a draft bill that criminalizes female genital mutilation, or FGM. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still in Sudan, Sudan's transitional government is urging Ethiopia and Egypt to de-escalate tensions over filling the Ethiopian Grand Dam, which Ethiopia promises to do in the coming week. Egypt fears filling the dam will reduce its water share down the Nile. A recent negotiations between three countries ended without agreement on filling the $6.8 billion dam which Ethiopia is building on the Blue Nile. Sudanese authorities who mediated in the recent talks say Ethiopia should not take unilateral action and instead the three countries must commit to negotiations until an agreement is reached. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Sudan, Egypt, and Ethiopia held virtual talks last week to resolve contentious issues regarding the Grand Ethiopia Renaissance Dam, which Ethiopia began building in 2011 and which promises to provide much-needed electricity to Ethiopia's 100 million population. After the talks ended without a deal last week, the Ethiopian Foreign Ministry said on Friday the government will proceed with the gradual filling of the dam's 70 billion cubic meter reservoir. Speaking Arabic, Sudan's Chargé d'Affaires in Washington, D.C., Amira Aqarib, says the move could provoke hostility with Egypt.
We don't want the situation to escalate. Going back to the negotiations table is the only way out. The technical issues related to the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam have been worked out and agreed upon. But there are still outstanding legal issues. Sudan maintains that reaching a final agreement is a prerequisite for Ethiopia to start filling the dam.
Ethiopia and Egypt have been at loggerheads over the dam for years. In February, the United States hosted a round of talks between Egypt, Ethiopia and Sudan to iron out technical and legal issues about the dam, but Ethiopia pulled out of the talks and did not sign the framework agreement. The deal was only initialed by Egypt. The Egyptian government submitted a petition to the United Nations Security Council asking for its intervention to resolve the matter. The council has yet to make a statement on the dispute. Aqarib says Sudan will not support a unilateral move by Ethiopia to fill the dam.
I would like to emphasize the need to sign an agreement between Egypt, Sudan and Ethiopia before Addis Ababa can proceed with filling the dam on July 1st, as we have always stated.
Aqarib says Sudan seeks a fair agreement that ensures equitable sharing of Nile waters between upstream countries like Ethiopia and downstream countries like Sudan and Egypt.
Ethiopia says the power that will be generated from the dam that is being built on the Blue Nile is very important for development projects in the country, while Egypt says the dam will threaten their share of the Nile, most of which comes from the Blue Nile, and which will have devastating effects on its economy and food security.
A draft agreement in February, which Ethiopia refused to sign, centered around the prevention of significant harm to downstream countries. Agarib says the filling of the dam should not take place without an agreement between the three countries.
We consider Ethiopia's position, which is basically reversing what we discussed in Washington, is not acceptable to the parties in these negotiations. The three countries must reach a binding agreement that no party can withdraw from.
Ethiopia plans to fill the dam gradually over a period of 6 years, beginning July 1st. Repeated calls to Ethiopian government representatives in Sudan and Washington, D.C. to comment on this report went unanswered. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
UN officials, on the occasion of World Refugee Day, are warning the COVID-19 pandemic poses an additional threat to millions of refugees and displaced people among the most vulnerable in the world. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
More people live in forced exile than ever before. The UN Refugee Agency says refugees account for nearly 30 million of the record-breaking 79.5 million uprooted by conflict and persecution. An overwhelming majority live in poor countries with fragile economies and health systems. World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says refugees' living conditions put them at particular risk of coronavirus infection.
They often have limited access to adequate shelter, water, nutrition, sanitation, and health services.
UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi agrees with this assessment. However, he notes most refugees are not in camps, but in communities with local people. In some places, he says, those communities have been devastated by the pandemic.
I'm thinking of Latin America, where 17, 18 countries host more than 4 million Venezuelans on the move. I'm thinking of many urban centers in Africa that are host to large refugee populations. I'm thinking of Afghans in Pakistan and Iran that share facilities and accommodation with communities that have been impacted very severely by COVID.
Grandi says he also is extremely concerned about the impact of COVID-19 on livelihoods. He says most refugees have lost their jobs because of lockdowns and other measures. He says refugees who have lost their incomes cannot pay for health care. It is of utmost importance, he says, for governments to include refugees, displaced people, and other people on the move in their national health responses to the pandemic. He says this is key to stopping the pandemic, noting the coronavirus makes no distinction between citizens of a country and those who have been forcibly uprooted from their homes and live within their midst. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with a traditional song from the Blue Nile State in Sudan. We've been listening to a traditional song from the Blue Nile State in Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there is no cure for the coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Imagine. Imagine. Sudan.